Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me?
Cool. Yeah, I just had to get it on my computer because it wasn't working on my phone.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, that happens sometimes. Thank you so much for being on, man.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for asking me to do it.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's just like, it's so cool, you know, everything that you do with Comedy Fight Club and, you know, the stuff that I've heard, you know, honestly, I am. The first thing I want to ask you is not even comedy related. You trained to be a wrestler, right?
Yeah. I worked on the indie circuit for a few years.
How was that? What was that like?
It was pretty wild. So when I was growing up, I did just pretty much every sport, and the only one I ended up, I did a few years of judo and then amateur wrestling, and that was probably the only sport I was ever good at. And then one of my amateur, so when I was a kid, I watched WWE.
Right.
But then once I started doing pro wrestling, all the amateur wrestling, all the guys in amateur wrestling are like, we do the real thing. That stuff is fake and dumb. So I would, I stopped watching. My parents banned me from watching it too. But I was so like out of it until when I was in high school, one of my teachers was actually a pro wrestler with WWE.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard of Matt Stryker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was my ninth grade social studies teacher, got fired for wrestling in Japan. And then when that summer, I watched WWE and he was on TV being a teacher character.
Right. Yeah,
and
I remember that.
Yeah, and then I kind of got hooked into it again. And one of my amateur wrestling friends had an older brother who was doing independent wrestling shows up in New Rochelle. And we would go there, kind of like set up the ring, and they'd let us fool around a little bit in the ring and train us a little bit. And I guess they saw some potential in me. I would get on the microphone and talk a lot. And they told me I had good mic skills. And then put me in a class, like 10 or 15 people, where they just tried to get everyone to quit. And I was the only one who didn't quit. And they put me in a tag team match. And then I guess it could have just been a one-off. But from there, I liked it. And I really dedicated myself to it. And, yeah, for about 3 or 4 years, that was my plan of what I was going to do in my life.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, I'm a big wrestling fan. So, like, it's cool to hear stories like that of how you did it. When you were doing the amateur wrestling, like, do you feel like that helped you, like, transition pretty well into what you were doing?
Like, as far as transitioning into pro wrestling
and stuff, like, was it, like, easier that you kind of knew, like, how to, like, kind of get hit a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the physicality of it, it prepared me for that. I mean, amateur wrestling, it just prepares you for everything because of, like, the insane workload you're going
right.
through. Just, like, the training for it's ridiculous. Just the very idea of one-on-one, if you get beat, you're humiliated in front of everyone. So it prepares you for that. And then as far as just, you know, some basic physicality, is, you know, the moves and stuff in pro wrestling are at this point pretty far away from the moves in amateur wrestling.
Right, of course.
But I was able to bring in a little bit of that. I would get booked on these shows where they would do a lot of the deathmatch stuff.
Oh.
And I would be the guy who was supposed to have, like, the real wrestling match in the middle of it to show that they're not just all blood and guts. They actually know how to wrestle. But they'd put me with the guys who were the blood and guts guys, and I can tell you, they didn't know how to wrestle.
Right. And was that frustrating to you, or were you sort of expecting that with them?
No, it was frustrating where they want me to... Well, also, I was pretty new. I only did it 3 or 4 years, so I never got to the point where I was very experienced, but they want me to carry an entire genre on the show and be the one representative of it. And then be working with someone who thinks he knows how to do it, but actually doesn't know how to do it. And, you know, I would know how to do more amateur wrestling moves, but I was still young enough that I didn't necessarily understand the psychology and work in the crowd of professional wrestling.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, too. Like, I would always think with that of, like, there's so much pressure in performing anything. Just to have, like, and also a life, like, a very dangerous thing that you're doing. It must have been like, the one thing I'm curious about is, and I hope you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
Now I'm 31.
Oh, 31. Okay. So you did that in your 20s?
This was, right out of high school. It was between 17 and 21.
Wow.
I had to lie and say I was 18.
Right.
For my first few matches.
Oh, really? They didn't have, like, I know they have, like, really weird, like, state licensing in some places. So, like,
yeah,
that's always interesting to me.
Yeah, I didn't have any license or any. In some of the places, like, the shows would work with the state athletic commission. But I know just in New York, they just told me to say I was 18. I didn't ask any more questions than that.
Right.
And, yeah, and also I know because I had trained some, like, mixed martial arts also. And so around the time I was wrestling and I was training, one of my coaches was an old, like, catch-as-catch-can wrestler from Europe. And so he would train MMA guys also, and I would train with him. But MMA was illegal in New York at the time.
Oh, right.
So there would be, like, full contact sparring sessions because they couldn't do amateur fights, or they would have to go to Connecticut to do an amateur fight and things like that. So I don't even know what the licensing would have been for pro wrestling at the time when MMA wasn't even legal.
Right. It's just so interesting because, like, I dig a lot of that style. So, like, was that something that you were, like, did amateur wrestling kind of feed into that sort of, like, for that style? Did you like the really technical, like, base stuff?
Kind of. I mean, when I was a kid, I just liked the crazy stuff, like the TLC matches. Undertaker was my favorite. It's just the over-the-top characters, flashy things. In hindsight, as I got older, I look back and I realize, oh, there were other guys who did flashy things that I didn't care about. It really is all story and character. And once I kind of started understanding that part of it, then I got really into it. Actually learning the psychology and the why behind the things that, you know, most fans who watch wrestling, I don't think even know why they like what they're watching. They'll say, I like that cool move. And it's like, okay, but there's plenty of guys who've jumped off a roof and slammed someone through a table. Why do people care more about when Undertaker does it to Mankind?
Right.
Like, there's a story to everything. The psychology, the I enjoyed being the heel. And that was something else that amateur wrestling did end up preparing me for pro wrestling. My second or third year. So when I did the amateur wrestling, my school's never had a team. So I would have to do a walk-on tournament and I would do summer tournaments.
Right.
But to get into the tournaments, I had to do a walk-on tournament and come in, like, the final four of that. So I think my second or third year, I win the walk-on tournament, or I'm one of the finalists in the walk-on tournament. So I get to be in the real tournament. First round, I was matched up against the guy who was, like, a state champion. And a lot of people were there to see him. And he was, like, shorter than everyone else. It was all the same weight class. He was a short, stocky guy. But because he was shorter, he was seen as, like, the underdog. And then I'm the nobody from the walk-on tournament, and I beat him in the first round. And I got booed. I was, like, 12 years old, and parents are booing me because I beat the, like, golden boy.
Was that, like, as being a wrestling fan, I don't know how, like, I would even react to that, but, like, did you think that was cool, or did it, like, offend you, or were you, like, oh, I, how did that really?
At first, I felt good that I won, and then when I heard the booing, I kind of started to feel like, what's wrong? Did I do something wrong? And then I just kind of quickly, maybe it would, I mean, I'm an athlete, I've heard, like, guys who are, I'm a big, like, sports fan, so I'd heard guys in wrestling or in other sports just kind of, like, always talk about being motivated, and I just kind of took it as, well, if they booed me after that one, they're going to really hate me after the next round, and just used it as motivation to keep going through the tournament.
Right.
And, yes, and then later on when I started getting into pro wrestling and being a heel, being able to thrive off of boos, it was interesting. Amateur wrestling kind of prepared me for it in that way, too.
Yeah, that's, like, the one thing, like, when we I want to talk about Comedy Fight Club as well. What I love about that, I love the aesthetic towards it and everything you guys do with that, because, like, I know you guys have Mark Henley, and it is very pro wrestling to me in a way, like, orientated.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the idea was doing roast battles, but as a pro wrestling show.
Yeah, I thought I love it. I mean, it's so cool just to see it. And, like, you know, it's always so cool when that just happens. Like, it was cool that Mark, you know, met you guys and was like, oh, they like this wrestling stuff too. They do this with their shows. Like, how did it come about? Basically, is what I'm
asking. So. Yeah, it was, we'll always remember the day because the first one we ever did was on September 11th, 2015. It was just the roast battles had like come to New York. It was just becoming a thing out in LA. And they brought it over to New York, and there was the Stand Comedy Club and New York Comedy Club were doing the roast battle shows. And I had just done a friend's birthday roast. It was the first roast I'd ever done. But I grew up watching the Comedy Central roasts. My sense of humor has always been a little bit dark, and my writing was always kind of punchy. So I felt like I would be well-suited for roasts. And when I was asked to do my friend's birthday roast, it was the whole crowd. It was like all a bunch of like New York comedians. So a lot of people were there to see it. I went up last, and I had one of the best sets I'd ever had up to that point. So then fast forward a couple months, roast battles start coming, and everyone's asking me to do the roast battles. And I didn't really want to. I like the Deus roast, and I didn't really necessarily see roast battles as something I would like as much. But then Ben Switzer, I'm not sure if you know him, he's a New York guy. I haven't really seen him around in a while, but he and like Usama Siddiqui, Eagle Wit, they all started doing like roast battles between sets at open mics.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And like doing a roast battle, trying to do their own roast battle stand up show and just trying to figure something out. And then finally, Ben Switzer came up with the idea of doing just open mic roast battles called Comedy Fight Club. And he asked me to face my friend who I'd roasted for his birthday. So I was like, all right, it's my friend. Sure, I'll do that. Went up on that one, did really well. And at that point, it wasn't even a weekly show. It was whenever Stairs Bar would let us do it, which went out of business like 3 weeks later. But yeah, we would just do one on a Tuesday, the next week on Friday, the next week on Thursday, and then the bar closed. But I had taken over hosting one of them because Ben had to leave early. And then we had an idea, like me and him, I went to him. I was like, hey, I'll run this with you. Let's do a weekly show. And I took over as host. Ben would open the shows, and he was still there every week until he ended up getting another job like a few months in. I think he also just said he was getting tired of it. Every time I see him now, he says, I was tired of this 5 years ago. I don't know how you're still doing it.
Right. Yeah. That's the one thing that's, you know, the thing with comedy that I'm terrible with is like any time anything's like has difficulty to it or like something you more have to do, like I hate hosting, I don't like doing that. So like I always have a big respect for people who can host really well. Like you're just good with that. Like, you know, I know you got complimented on like your mic skills when you were wrestling. Have you always been like a very like, do you think, outgoing person?
Yeah, I was always, even as a kid, anytime I got in trouble as a kid, it was always like, you know, I got good grades. I was a good kid, but the teacher would be like, he's a good kid. He just needs to learn how to keep his mouth shut. So I've been running my mouth for a very long time and never had any problem like getting in front of the class to read. I was always pretty outgoing in that way. And yeah, then as soon as like we were training wrestling and the opportunity to get on the microphone and insult people came up, I was like, all right, I'll do that. I didn't realize that years later I would have too many concussions to keep wrestling, but I'd still be just saying mean things about people on stage.
Oh, so that's what pretty much happened. You got a lot of concussions.
My last year I had 3 concussions in a year. And I also had knee issues and back issues. I was like 21 years old, and it was a 10-step process getting out of bed every day.
Oh, like that. Like,
and that, like, so I, but oh, yeah, sorry, I didn't even really like quit. I was also a loudmouth who didn't know how to keep his opinions to himself in the locker room sometimes. So I rubbed enough people the wrong way. I'd burned some bridges too. If I didn't like what a booker wanted me to do, I had no problem saying very loudly I didn't like it, which just isn't how you should handle things. But it was how 19, 20-year-old Matt did decide to handle things.
I can understand how that happens.
Yeah.
Like, was there an age? There must have been an age difference with when you started. Was that an issue, like, that you had?
Yeah, I was one of the younger people there all the time. And I was always trying to prove myself. I was trying to seem tougher, seem more mature. Which a lot of times would be me thinking I know better. And in hindsight, there were some times where I did know better, but I just wasn't I didn't always handle it in the most diplomatic way.
Right. Do you do you find comedy, like comedians and stuff, like to be easier in that social sort of aspects?
Not necessarily. I think I'm better at dealing with people. I'm more humble than I was. Comedy humbled me for sure. I think a lot of people, when they get into comedy, they come into it where they're kind of like shy, more reserved, and stand-up helps them come out of their shell.
Right.
And there's some people you'll see where they're kind of overconfident and they don't understand why people aren't laughing at their joke, and it kind of like ruins them. A lot of those people end up quitting. Like, I'm just going to go back to my life where I'm awesome. I came from that, but I just stuck with it and was like, no, I'm going to put in the work here. It's probably better for me to think I'm the man and then go on stage and just bomb and have to live with that. I think that'll, I don't know if I knew it at the time, but in hindsight, I'm like, it definitely made me a better person and better at dealing with people.
That's so good to hear. Like, that's a cool thing about stand-up, I think, is it really does, like, if you do it long enough, like, it really does help you in your life with whatever you have.
Yeah, and it's the ultimate equalizer. It doesn't matter if you were a pro, you know, I wouldn't make it to a high level, but, you know, I was a pro wrestler who would sell my autograph to people and was in a main event of a show with 500 people in an audience once. That doesn't matter. You get on stage, you could still bomb.
Right.
You could bomb, and then somebody who never had sex and is 25 years old could kill.
Right. And with the comedy, who were your like favorite comedians before you did stand up? Like, who really like got you into like, okay, I want to do this?
So actually wanting to do it, I mean, early, like my comedic influence early on, South Park was a big one.
The first
comedy thing I remember watching, like my parents would watch Friends a lot and like knew who Seinfeld was. The first time we got cable and there was like some funny stuff in wrestling, but the first like comedy stuff, South Park was the first thing where I'm like, oh my God, they can make jokes like this. It was just like a whole other level, like dark jokes, dirty jokes. The Comedy Central roasts was big. Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. So all the Colin Quinn, Patrice O'Neill, Greg Giraldo. Once the Comedy Central Presents started coming out, and I would see Bill Burr's, Doug Stanhope's, Norm MacDonald, Chappelle, Rock. And as I got older, I started going with YouTube getting bigger. I would go back and watch old Don Rickles stuff, Joan Rivers. Red Fox doesn't get talked about enough.
No, he doesn't.
Watch some old Red Fox stuff. He's so funny.
He is amazing. It's crazy how like I've listened to him every once in a while, and like anytime anyone brings him up, it's the same. He's like one of the most underrated. And
yeah. And then what made me, I guess, really feel like I could do it was I would on wrestling road trips, we would all like tell each other street jokes, and I would sometimes like post those jokes on like as my Facebook status. And after a while, I would get friends saying, "You have really funny Facebook statuses." And I would start coming up with ideas for jokes and post them, but kind of say, like, here's a joke I heard, because I didn't want to tell anyone I had actually written it myself.
Right.
And then I started getting, like, good feedback on some of the ones that I'd written myself. And so I remember Anthony Jeselnik was getting real big at the time, and I was decent at writing kind of one-linery jokes, like one after another like that. So that was around the time. Bo Burnham was another one who was big around that time.
Kind
of one-linery stuff or like really clever plays on words. And that was stuff that, I knew I was good at, and seeing two guys who were really successful doing that. Cause I mean, you know, not that anyone's better, that it's just what your specific skills are. I didn't ever look at Patrice O'Neill or Greg Giraldo and feel like I could do what they were doing.
That makes sense. Like,
and maybe, you know, Greg Giraldo, I think, as I got more into comedy, he does like more bits and stuff. But early on, I was a good writer and I could write a good joke, which is, I think, what lended me well to roasting. But as I've done more stand up, I have more bits and I can like tell a story. But at first, I was very just kind of one linery.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one liners are, I always respect people who can do one liners. You've had John Beecroft on your roasts before, right?
I think so. I don't remember.
But anyway, you've had a lot of people. But
yeah,
you can't even remember them. But anyway, I'm really close with him, and he's a one-liner guy. And like that was the coolest thing, was like hanging out with him, and like it always rubs off on you, the different comedians that you hang out with. Like VJ is very. We live together. He's very dark sense of humor very clever, like, dark sense of humor. And
yeah,
whenever we can find stuff that's, like, really offensive, but, like, smart and yeah, not, like, low, it's low, it's like the highest of lowbrow in a way to explain it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, in general, those are just my favorite laughs. Whenever you were hanging out late at night with your friends, someone said something so terrible, you're all laughing and you know you shouldn't, but you can't help but laughing. I always felt like those were my favorites. And the thing is, the more things get where you shouldn't say that, you shouldn't say this, you can kind of just say the dumb thing. It kind of becomes easier. Like, you can make the lowbrow joke, and it's funny because no one's even daring to say that stuff anymore.
Yeah. And I love the atmosphere that you guys have in the Comedy Fight Club and everything, because it is, you are upfront about it, about, you know, how people are, but also it's not, it never feels like a bad way. It always feels like you guys have a good, like, equal term with everything of, like,
yeah, I think, yeah, I think some of it is that I'm not mean-spirited, so me hosting it and saying that, I don't think anyone see, if the person hosting it ever seemed like they're actually mean anything, or they could be a little mean-spirited, I don't think it works. So I think some of it is that I'm able to set the precedent, and I'm smiling, and it's fun. We're all in this together. I think an important part of it is that from the beginning, I book all different kinds of people. From even, like, in the New York comedy scene, I would book people from different places in the New York scene. When we first started, I'd been doing stand-up about 3 years, and already things were starting to get splintered. Like, there'd be the Creek and the Cave comics, the Brooklyn comics, the Manhattan comics. But I kind of knew all of them. Even, like, 3 years earlier, everyone would just go to the same mics. So it became a place where you would see guys roasting, girls roasting, Brooklyn comics roasting, Queens comics, people of all different races, religions. And so, you know, if it even, like, if it is all just white guys, it's going to be a little bit, oh, so you're just all white people saying racist things. I think it is important to let everyone know that, hey, this is a thing that we're all okay with. You do need, like, a diverse group of people. That being something that I remember early on, we would just do open signups, and I would say, we're going to do a tournament. First 32 people who respond to this common thread are in, and you just get, like, 30 white guys. So I started having to book it and reach out to people myself. Because, you know, I think a female comic may not necessarily feel as hyped up to go out of their way to sign up to do the roast, but if you ask them, they will.
Oh, right. Did you ever have, like, instances at all early on with people who were a little, like, too far in not a good way, like, just kind of didn't have, like, a good vibe?
Like
you guys are pretty good at picking out people.
But, you know, we've had plenty of people who try to go too far. They try to do something that doesn't work. We've had several white comics try and say the N-word in a joke. It almost never works.
And
for the most part, we have a judges panel. We have me up there. And we've always been able to recover the rear. I guess very early on, there were times where either someone was too drunk and was heckling, or there was just something going on that kind of ruined the vibe of the show. And on the way home, I would just think of all the things I could have said in the moment to save it. And that's just happened so many times just in the first year that, you know, within a few years at this point, there's, like, nothing that can happen that I'm not prepared for.
So how long has it been? Like, 4 years?
A little over six and a half years.
Oh, that one. Wow.
Yeah, September 2015.
2015, right. You said that.
Yeah. But yeah, and you'll appreciate this. So at first, when it was the New York Comedy Club and the Stand, I would go to those, and I enjoyed them. They felt like they took it a little bit seriously. Like, it felt like a boxing match or a UFC fight.
Yeah.
So my thought was to be the pro wrestling one. And while they have, you know, we can't book necessarily the same talent that they can. So my thought was, all right, if they're WCW and WWE, we'll be the ECW Comedy Fight Club roast show.
Yeah, that totally makes a lot of sense. Because I imagine with places like The Stand and, like, stuff like that, like, they kind of want at least known people in a way.
Yeah.
So it's like, when you can get people that are kind of an, like, that's one thing I love about comedy too, is it has that very vibe of like, it just always has that vibe I love, where it's like a person can be, you know, and that's the cool thing about doing this podcast, is I've had comedians on that are like working comics, and like people that are, have notoriety. And the greatest thing that I've always experienced is they all view like everyone that does comedy as a comic.
Yeah.
Like I've never, I have yet to meet a comedian who's has like an album and is like touring and stuff, who is, who like looks down on anyone.
They, yeah, it's only the comics. It's only the people who are really insecure with where they are.
Yeah.
It, yeah.
A very good like experience. And I love like when also seeing like everyone, that's the cool thing too about seeing everyone involved in the Comedy Fight Club, is like to see people you don't really see around, like, cause you get everyone from all different places.
Yeah. That was early on. That was, I remember a comic told me after our Fight Club and within like the first few months that it was the only show in the comedy community that actually makes us feel like a comedy community, which is the best compliment I could have asked for. Yeah. Yeah, I loved that. It really was, and thinking about it now, especially like in the New York scene, there is a level of like, you know, there's open micers. You're all just running around doing open mics. You can start getting put on bar shows, but no one knows who you are. Once you get to like the club level and start getting credits, that's like a whole other level. Comedy Fight Club's kind of this in between where you can get on Comedy Fight Club and pretty much all these people, a lot of people, Comedy Fight Club is the thing that they will be most known for.
Right.
That it's, you know, within a couple years of doing comedy, you're not going to be able to get up at the Cellar or even the Stand or a lot of these other places. But you can get on the Comedy Fight Club YouTube channel, which has over 1,000 subscribers. Like, there is, like, Comedy Fight Club kind of created a platform above open mics, but still below, like, credits and shows, but just, like, another step there.
Right.
That didn't really exist. Like, when I started doing stand-up, there was, okay, maybe one day in years I can get on shows that have a following. And now there is like Comedy Fight Club is a thing that even if you're just starting out, if you feel confident, you can get on a thing that has an audience.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And eventually we built it up enough that the Stand wants us there. They don't do Roastmasters anymore. And we were there every week, but we're there once a month now. But even still, like the fact that the whole basis of the show was I actually heard Paul Heyman, the old owner of ECW, say this about ECW. His mindset was because they couldn't afford the bigger stars that WCW and WWE could, that the star of the show was ECW. And that's why the fans would always chant for the company. Before that, no one ever chanted for a company. They chanted for your favorite wrestler.
Of course, but yeah.
But the idea was the only way we can make money is if people are paying for the company, because the stars, even if you build up a star, they're going to leave for more money.
Mm-hmm.
And with Comedy Fight Club, yeah, if somebody does really well here, we've had a bunch of people who've been on Fight Club, and then they've been on The Tonight Show, they're on MTV, Comedy Central, and they don't have as much time for Fight Club, which is totally fine, like, more power to them. Like, I'm not going to be mad at anyone for going and making a living in TV and saying I can't come to Fight Club each week or I don't want to prepare for roasts. But it's it was why my thought was, you know, comedy, the star of the show is Comedy Fight Club. It's all CFC, Comedy Fight Club. Right. And that branding is what we've like bet on.
Yeah, it's been awesome, like just to see everything. And to see those comics. Like the one thing I like about it a whole lot is it gives you, it is a good helpful thing. Like I have a mixed view on like if I like it or not, roast battles.
Yeah.
Like to me, my thing is always I would rather write for people that I know.
Yeah.
Which I think is like most people do. Like it's so funny. Like I was listening to someone talk about like the only negative is like your first time meeting someone can be very awkward.
Yeah, there's some people who the first time they meet is when they're roasting each other on stage.
The first person I ever did was for Comedy Fight Club was Scott Holt.
Yeah.
And that was a fun thing because like I kind of like everyone sort of like I didn't know that we were allowed to like talk to the person and like get information.
Oh yeah. So, like, yeah, usually people reach out, ask for some dirt or something.
And I was just like looking at all this stuff, and it went better than I expected. And the one thing that I like about it, which is so good to, like, my stuff is very self-deprecating, and, like, I kind of have, like, there's a lot that you can make fun of, so, like, it's good. It was, like, good that once I did, I was like, okay, there's stuff here.
Yeah, it's a good joke writing exercise, and it's good for creativity. That was always one of my favorite things about roasts, even, like, growing up watching the Comedy Central roasts, is when they say, like, anything goes, I don't think that just means anything goes as in content. Like, oh, you can do Holocaust jokes, 9/11 jokes, call people gay and rapists, pedophiles. It also means, like, any style. Like, I used to watch Gilbert Gottfried go up there and just do a completely different thing than what Greg Giraldo or Jeff Ross
were doing. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Going up there, they're just saying jokes, doing a set, and then you'd have Gottfried up there. You'd have Bill Hader came out as a character. There was always, like, wildly different. Norm Macdonald doing, like, the anti-jokes.
Yeah,
so at Comedy Fight Club, we'll have, that's why I have Patrick Haggerty closing out the show each night, like, just something completely goofy and ridiculous, because I think that also sets the tone of, like, the whole show is ridiculous, so any offensive things that are being said, it's all in the context of we're being ridiculous, which is why, for the most part, I think, we haven't really gotten in much trouble with anyone. Some of that also maybe we're just not big enough to get anyone's attention.
Right, but anyway, I like that whole entire thing. Like, you have, you always have those, like, Haggerty and everything. It's always so cool, like, to give people that space, because it gives people an opportunity also to be, like, themselves.
And
you can promote them in ways. Like, you know, I kind of, it's a shame that I don't really, like, live in the area where you guys do it, because when I was, like, I'm still figuring out, but when Sean Gardini was champion, I was, like, really fantasizing about, like, doing something about, like, facing him doing something, like, kind of gimmicky of, like, because I know I wouldn't be able to beat him because he's an amazing joke writer, but I'd love to come at it from, like, an Andy Kaufman kind of, like, false, like, sense of cockiness.
Yeah, it's tough. That's what Mark Henley went against Sean for the title, and his thought was kind of the same. Like, I don't think I can out joke write him, so I'm going to try and out bit him.
Right, and I just love that whole entire thing. So, did you have any ties to, like, friends? Like, how you got? Could you guys use, like, you guys? I can't remember if you guys use, like, actual belts and stuff or not.
So we have a title belt that's just a weightlifting belt with like steel plates nailed onto it. It's real ingenuity. It was me and Chris from Brooklyn from Gas Digital and Mike Harrington put it together. I think mostly Chris did most of the work. I bought the weightlifting belt and he got the steel plates and he drilled them in for us. It was so we had originally our first Comedy Fight Club championship was a like a toy WWE belt, and I just, like, put duct tape or masking tape over it and wrote Comedy Fight Club Championship on it. And then once we were on Gas Digital and we were doing Comedy Fight Club at Skangfest and declaring a new champion, we wanted to get a new belt, so we did the weightlifting belt with the steel plates.
That's so cool. Like, also the name, like, the places that you've done this and everything. That's, like, so cool to – did that feel – when did it – has it felt, like, recently is, like, when it's the most, like, hottest? Like, do you think you're, like, really at the hottest, like, part of it now?
I don't know. That's hard to say. Like, I felt like the months leading up to us getting Gas Digital in the stand just felt like constant momentum. Because we had a thing we were building towards. So it's, like, different because now we have a thing that we're building towards that our YouTube channel is now at 1,100 subscribers. And we're starting to get a little bit of money flowing in through monetization. Not much, but it's something there. And we're also starting to do more road shows. We did a few in Philly over the summer last year. We got another Philly one coming up. We just did Connecticut. Done more Jersey ones. We have Danelle and Theater coming up in a week, and the last one we did there was it was a full theater, more than half full. So there's, like, a lot of stuff that feels like we have a lot of momentum now, but it's also a little bit different than the momentum we had before, where the New York comedy scene is even more splintered than it was before. So it sometimes feels like there's not as much of a community as there was, where Sunday Night Fight Club was a hangout every single week for years. And right now, I don't feel like it's at the level that it was years ago. But also, there's all these road shows. So it's like there's still momentum. We're still hot, but it's just in different ways.
Right. That's right. Kind of a cool, but it's kind of cool that like now you have like shows, like actual things that you can do. Cause it's always, that's one thing that I always wonder with it is like how it all gets put together. Like,
yeah. So, I mean, well, yeah. So when we were on Guest Digital, we used to, Nico, our social media hipster, he literally within like the first, after like a year or so of doing it, a lot of comics would just hang out there every week. And that's how we got like the officials at first. Justin Lanza was there every week and we called him our spirit animal. We called Andrew Cacciatona the bishop and I'm like, do you guys want to go up and do a segment? It all kind of happened real organically. And Nico just came up to me and was like, hey, do you guys have a Twitter or Instagram? And I was like, no, do you want to do, if you make one, you could run it for us. And he's like, and I record the shows and put them up on Periscope. I was like, sure. And yeah, then once we got on Guest Digital, we started really doing audio, video, and all this stuff. And then when the pandemic hit and we became a traveling show, Gas couldn't really afford to run a traveling show with us. So we, you know, me and Nico talked. We talked with Justin and Mark and everyone. What do we want to do from here? And we all decided we'll all put in work to be able to still produce it. So Nico does the video recording. Ben Miller is with the, he's doing the audio editing. Justin Lanza is doing it. Justin Lanza was doing it for a while. He got a new job and can't do it. So now Ben's been doing the audio editing. We have Johnny Glover, who used to work at Gas Digital. I think he still does work with them a little bit. I'm not sure exactly, but he does video with us also. And we have Derek Gonzalez is our DJ, Don't Believe Women. When we do Jersey shows, Chris Pernod DJs. We kind of just have a lot of comics who are all willing to help out, kind of betting on the show being successful and us all being able to then pay ourselves out. But yeah, it's a big production with Gas Digital. And we had a producer who did a lot of that work. Now just on our own, it's kind of just, you know, I do the YouTube channel and the Patreon, put up the podcast on the website that we use for podcast hosting. It's yeah, it's all of us putting in a lot of work behind the scenes to be able to not just run a show, but be able to, if we go to Connecticut, we bring Nico and Ben, like we have a team that comes along to make sure we record it and we get footage and audio. We bought the sound equipment and everything.
Yeah. Cause I noticed that like when you guys, when I saw you guys do it, like when you came, to the Brighton Bar to do it, and you just set everything up, and it was like, oh, they have like a whole entire thing that they do. It's like,
yeah,
it's really good. And just to like shout out a person is like Ben Miller is like amazing. Like I've seen,
yeah, he's current Comedy Fight Club champion.
He is right. He's, I just remember seeing him. I didn't know that he was that like, I didn't know he was as successful as he was until recently. I was like, oh, he's doing, what's it called with Mark?
Edinburgh.
And that's like, yeah, that's like so fucking cool. I'm like, but
yeah.
And yeah. Every time I talk to the guy, he's super cool. Like, he's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Mark are both doing Edinburgh. They got a, Ben's doing a stand up science show, and the two of them are doing their Snack Attack show. And, potentially in the future, I can't go this summer, but potentially we can try and we were talking about maybe submitting Comedy Fight Club and doing a Comedy Fight Club out there for Edinburgh.
Oh, that would be, I can imagine that would be actually, that sounds really awesome. Just yeah, like knowing as so like I'm really into that. Like I followed a little bit the Edinburgh stuff, and it's so wild how different they view everything and how it's taken. And that could be, I think that could be a really cool, well, that just makes me geek out about that. Cause that's, just like,
yeah,
that's
yeah. It'd be fun to, I mean, I've gotten so excited when we just like go up to Connecticut and we book a lot of all Connecticut people. If we could like tour the show even around the US. Like, eventually, if we just, you know, have a team of, like, you know, if you send me, Mark, and Nico, could get flown in somewhere. And on another one, it could be, like, Mark, Patrick, and Nico. We could, like, just figure out a combination of two or three of us that, if we can get flown in, we can go to wherever your venue is, record a comedy fight club, produce it ourselves, and book all of your people. Yeah, if that was an option, we'd love to eventually start doing that. And I think the more out-of-town shows we do, the more that potential becomes a reality. So that's, like, the real exciting stuff now is how many shows we've got going for us outside of New York.
Right, and this is so cool that you have all that, like, the stuff that you're doing, which is everything. But, like, when you started it with everyone, like, was this kind of always, this might be a stupid question, but was this always the, like, the plan, or were you just, like, did you just take it as it went on?
I mean, I started doing it because I thought it was a fun and exciting thing to do, and I had, like, ideas to make it, like, a pro wrestling roast battle show. And eventually, you know, I think just with anything in comedy, it's like if something is fun and you think it can grow. I didn't have in my head specifically, I want to take over Roastmasters. I want to be on Guest Digital. I want to be at the Stand. I want to be a touring show. I want to be on TV. Like, I didn't know what it was going to be. I think it's just, it's something that I believed in that I thought would be fun. And let's keep doing it and see where it goes.
Right. And when it's so interesting to talk about, like, there's such a history now, like, as we talk about, with sort of roast comedy and roast battles and everything. Yeah. And how it's going, like, that's one of the coolest things. Like, you know, it's kind of a shame and kind of, like, ironic in a way that we're kind of talking about it, is like that like Norm died and Saget, and like it's such like a weird like period of like that, but it's like people love that now. And
what, when their favorite comedians die?
No, not when people die. Like, people love that sense of humor now, like, I've noticed. Yeah. Like, they, it's really kind of, I don't know how to,
no, there's all, like, there's always going to be an audience for quote-unquote like messed up jokes.
Yeah,
it's I think the thing that's weird in our lifetime is that or at least for me, like, growing up, it was always right-wing people that were the stuffy people who didn't want you to joke about things.
Right.
And if you were a comedian, you were liberal. Like, George Carlin, like, all these guys, Jon Stewart, they were all, like, liberals because the liberal side was the side of, like, right, more freedom. And now there's, like, left-wing people who are
right,
the ones kind of lecturing and telling you that you can't joke about certain, yeah, things. So I think that's where it gets a little confusing, where,
oh, yeah,
people
for
think,
sure,
oh, these people who are the good guys are telling me I shouldn't be making this joke.
Right.
Where the truth is, like, no one's a good guy or a bad guy. You can, the,
right,
for comedy, the bad guy is anyone who's telling you what you can or can't say. It doesn't matter what their other political beliefs,
no, of,
are,
course. It is. Like, that's one of the, that's one of the most, like, interesting things to me is, like, I'm a very, like, progressive person politically, and I know, like, a majority, a good amount of, like, I don't think, I know that Norm was, like, right-wing leaning-ish, but, like,
yeah,
he never, like, seemed like that was their, like, he was never pushy towards it, it seemed like, though.
Yeah.
So it was always, like, that was always a good thing. Like, to me, I always keep it as, I never want to be viewed as, like, someone who always, who views it that way. Like, I always think there's a proper context for jokes, and...
Yeah, it depends on what you're going for. It depends on what you're going for. Like, I don't mind political comedians. If the genre you're going for is political comedy, kind of by all means. But, you know, I mostly tell dick jokes and wrestling jokes and or jokes about the Holocaust. Like, I don't need people to, I don't need to alienate anyone based on politics.
Right. Yeah.
Like, if I ever joke about politics, it's jokes about politics. It's not jokes like, coming necessarily from one side or the other. I got made fun. I've been unfriended on Facebook by conservatives and liberals who both said that I'm too far left or too far right. So,
right. And I think it's just such a thing with comedy. It's like, you know, there really is no, like, I can see it from, like, as you, and, like, you can just tell by people. It's like, that's, but that happens. Like, you know, that's kind of the funny thing. It's like everyone has their stuff, you know. And to me, I always try to keep like a level head about it. And that's what I love seeing with Comedy Fight Club, where, like I mentioned, there is just like an, it seems like there's an honor code a little bit of like, we're not going to get offended, but also like no one's doing this outright as like a, like no one has bad intentions ever.
Yeah, I don't ever tell anybody what to say. Also, I don't tell people you better say this. Like, I remember I had a battle, two Indian comics went against each other, and they just kept doing like making fun of each other, like you curry this, and just doing stereotypical Indian jokes against each other, which I'm fine with. But if they also felt like, okay, we're both Indian, so I'm gonna go deeper, like that's fine also. Like, I'll never tell anyone what to do. I do kind of love when someone just goes up there and it's like, all right, we're both Asian, I'm going to do the dumbest Asian joke possible against this Asian person. But I also like when you get two girls who are really good friends with each other and they're going deep into more personal stuff as opposed to just you're a fat whore or whatever. But I like all of it. I like a good mix of really smart jokes and really dumb ones because I think they could all be funny.
And the great thing with comedy is it's such a, like, people have also, like, I always say this all the time, people have who they are as people, and then, like, it's the closest thing to wrestling in that, like, a lot of how people are on stage, it's just, like, 10 times themselves. So it's always cool when you get to see those matchups. Like, that's one of the greatest things about, like, Comedy Fight Club, I think, really does a good job with that, is, like, finding two people that have, like, just perfect personalities to go up against each other.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes we really get it, and sometimes we really don't.
Like, it can be also be tough because I can imagine, like, people can be pretty picky about, like, who they go up against, and, like, you might really want someone, and it's like... Yeah,
or just sometimes someone, they don't necessarily have good chemistry together.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's, like, so tricky about it, because I've seen that, where it's like, oh, you think it would be... good and
sometimes sometimes we match people up just based on who knows each other. Sometimes we do based on I feel like their energies together will be fun, and a lot of times we can like get like you and Scott Holt, I feel like your dueling energies was going to be entertaining.
Oh yeah, and the only thing I loved about that was like that it was so ambiguous of what would happen of like okay, this is what it was. And the way that I came about it, which is still kind of like a funny thing, like how I didn't do any research on him. So I kind of played up that, like, everyone sort of said, like, he had a wild, like, kind of sense of humor.
Yeah.
So my sort of tactic that I went on was, like, to call him boring. Mm. And then he didn't really do as much, like, material because he just, you know, it's easy with me to make fun of, you know, tons of stuff because I just get up there and just, like, walk. So it's like, but it was cool, and I've always really appreciated how you guys have also treated me, if that makes sense. Like, you've done a really good job with that. Like, it's always been like, oh yeah, these people get it. Like, I've always
how we've treated you.
Yeah, like I've always really liked it. Like, just I just wanted to say that. I've always felt like you guys have been, you know, super awesome with every time that I've come by and done anything.
Yeah, you've been fun on the show, and we always appreciate, like, you know, the show wouldn't be what it is without comics being willing to come out, write jokes. You know, people have to prepare for it.
Yeah,
and it's a big ask to ask somebody to prepare for a comedy show and not just come and do their set. So we always appreciate anybody who's willing to do it and come out, and you know, and then also we have the judges and everything, so even if somebody comes out and they have a bad night or whatever, we can just make fun of them.
Right.
And as long as they're a good sport about it and they came and they tried, I'll always keep bringing people back. And because, you know, we have all these fail safes of like the judges, me up there, you have another person you're battling. So for the most part, unless it's like one dud after another for every single battle, the show's always still going to be fun.
Right. And I think you guys have a really good barometer sort of quality expecting, like, you know, you don't make it as, you know, you mentioned like how the stand would kind of make it a little too competitive, it still stays fun. Is there always, is that hard to do? Like, do you think to keep it in that level of like, okay, this has to be good, but we don't want to take it too seriously?
Yeah, I think me and the judges, the way we kind of joke about the show kind of always keeps it a little bit self-deprecating. But, you know, again, I don't control any of the battlers or anything.
Right.
When people are facing each other, sometimes they get really competitive and they really want to win. And they'll get really upset if they lose. I can't control that besides just telling them it's about putting on a good performance more than it is about winning. Like, that's the pro wrestling side of it.
Right.
I think what happens is there's a lot of people in comedy who never played sports growing up. So this the only thing, this is the only competitive thing they've ever done. So they feel like they really need to win it.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I'm like,
it's
just
a whole bunch of athletic dweebs who are like, a competition that I can be in.
Right. It's like, oh, I'm the most clever person. It's like,
yeah,
that's so great. So,
well, because you have comics are stubborn in the same way that athletes are, but they just never had the athletic ability to compete like on a baseball diamond or a football field. But, oh, I could write jokes, and there's still that competitive spirit, like, within them.
Right. But,
and, yeah, I mean, I was doing a whole bunch of the battles. I feel like I lost as much as I won. I remember when I did the stand, they said I had, like, an 11-1 record when I first started. I don't know where they got that from.
Oh.
But, yeah, I felt like I would lose as much as I would win. But I would, what I noticed was I would see people had, other people did better against me than I would see them in other battles. I felt like I was easy to play off of, which, as you know, from pro wrestling, being a heel, that was like my job. So in comedy, I love being able to be that.
Right. Do you have any connection? Has it ever connected in any type of way, like your pro wrestling history at all with anything?
A little. So, like, we did a couple of shows at Capitol Wrestling, like, in the ring during intermission.
Oh, that's awesome.
Probably not the best setting for a roast battle in the middle of a pro wrestling show during their intermission. We did it a few times, and the last time was the last time we did it because the audience was not there for a roast. We had to go up after a death match. They were vacuuming blood off the ring, so we couldn't go in the ring. So we were just on stage trying to yell jokes over a vacuum. And they also wanted us to be super clean with the jokes. So it, you know, it was a nice little experiment. But we did one in a UFC gym also a couple years ago in upstate New York. But yeah, through wrestling, it's now called Catalyst Wrestling. They're on Gas Digital, and that came about because they reached out to me after seeing me do the roasts on Gas Digital and knew that I was a wrestler, and I put them in contact with the Gas people.
All right. Well, that's just, you know, it's so awesome that you have that. Do you have any shows coming up?
I think it's mostly just fight clubs I have coming up now, but I'll plug my podcast I do with Joe Gorman and Bobby Sheehan. It's called Locker Room Talk. Just started it a couple of months ago. We got the Patreon out, so we do a bonus episode each week. And we're starting to build with that also. We get, I think it's about 1,000 downloads an episode. So that's great. That's been pretty fun so far.
I gotta check that out because Gorman is another person that is like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Joe is very funny.
He is just, I remember the first time I saw him was like, just the high energy-ness of like, oh,
yeah,
so funny.
Yeah, and he's just ridiculous. He's a human cartoon character. But yeah, if anybody's in New York, we do the Comedy Fight Clubs every Sunday night at 9:30 at Bowery Electric. The last Sunday of the month is at the Stand Comedy Club. So this May 29th, if you can be in New York, that is Ben Miller defending his championship, his first title defense, against Divya Gunasekaran, who won our spring tournament. Also, if you're in Jersey, on May 14th, next Saturday, is when we're doing the Dunellen Theater. So I think they have tickets on their website for sale. And yeah, the last one we did there, more than half the theater was sold out. So let's try and sell out this theater. Dunellen Theater, May 14th.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on, man. And Thanks so much. Just
yeah definitely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll get you on another fight. We'll get you on another Fight Club soon.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Thank you. Have a nice night.
You too. Take care.